Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
You're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who do the fine art thing with the needle and the thread.
Yes.
And the needle and the thread, it would be really nice if I could actually use a needle and thread. But I can't ever be home or have time to do it. So maybe this week it will happen.
I think this is one of those cases of it's not that you can't, it's that you may not.
Yes.
It's one of those English teacher things.
Yes. Yeah. This is trade show mania. These, especially October conferences, just endless parade.
Yeah. Yep. So for us as well. Fortunately, I don't have to partake the same way that you do.
Well, I am jealous.
Yeah. But we are preparing all of our Christmas launches of new products and things of that nature. So,
oh, so six of one, half dozen the other. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So there we have it. Well, you know, as they say, we have full-time jobs that pay most of the bills, so we shouldn't complain.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. And when I needle work on in actually stitch, Going to go back to the sampler. I'm looking forward to an evening of X's, mindless X's, while TV is on. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you can. There's something soothing about that, stitching the cross-stitching samplers, and you just move along. And some nights I just choose where I'm going to just stitch a long line of X's and, you know, just go till I reach a corner, then turn and go some more.
Yeah, I think aside from the border, I think I have to find a portion of that that's like that, because the other portions, like even within the border, the floral bits, and they are not really that.
Right.
I find myself having to count. So that so far has not been that sort of piece for me. So I've actually been thinking of starting another surface embroidery piece, because that, even though it's not mindless in the same way that you, let me start again. It's, you have to think about it, but it's not in the way that you're sitting there looking at a chart and counting and looking at a chart and counting and looking at a chart. You're thinking about it, but you don't have to, you're not looking at reference material all the time and counting. It's a different area of the brain. So you can sit and you can stitch without having to look at 17 things, right?
No, I know exactly what you mean, because the limit for your stitch is right in front of you.
Right. It's whatever you decide it's going to be.
And yes.
Whether you're working from, you know, from somebody else's work, from a book, you know, from Jane Nicholas's book or Trish Burr's book or any of those sorts of things, or if you're working from photographs where, you know, you've drawn, you know, essentially you've drawn an outline on your silk or whatever your ground cloth is, and you're going to stitch in and you're going to build in colors there. And it's really just like, it's more like painting, right? So you can have music or whatever on in the background. And of course you have to look, but it's not the same thing where you're constantly counting everything and checking back and forth.
Yeah. And that's, I was thinking about that the other day. That's the neat thing. If you do different kinds of needlework, is for different moods and different settings.
Mm-hmm.
You can do just that. You know, today I just want to make X's. I don't want to think about a Jessica stitch or whatever. I just want to make X's. And tomorrow I feel like really focusing on Jessica stitches and getting them just right and putting on a little music in the background and having at it. And yeah, or I just want to just do short, long and short stitch and some stem stitching and just follow a line on a piece of cloth. And yeah, I think that's one of the things, because I think that's what people who do painted canvases enjoy, is that there's a defined space that they're going to make these stitches in, and mm-hmm. so it's right in front of them. They can just do it.
Right. Once they picked a stitch, then it's just right. You know, filling in the stitch, and then when you get to the edges, you know, how are you going to gracefully edge that part? Right.
Right. Yeah.
So Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm itching for now is to start a surface embroidery piece, and not, I'm sort of leaning away from, again, a black work piece, or I have a crewel piece that I'm working on that I've been working on forever. That's not like a Jacobean crewel work, but more of like an American type crewel work. That's very, I would say folksy type. It's very rough. It's just a piece that I work on just to have my hands moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I really want something a little bit more fine, because I want to paint with a needle.
Yeah.
That's really kind of what I'm doing. So really my commute, which is extraordinarily lengthy, is spent sort of, I'm trying to think of what it is I want to do, because you're going to invest a lot of time. These are not one-offs, you know, unless I do a Christmas ornament, which I haven't really thought about. So I'm trying to figure out like what is it I'm going to do? And that's sort of where I am sitting with this, but I really feel like I need to do it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And the other day, I scroll through Facebook, and I have a Feedly is the news feed that I use. And I have a whole bunch of websites and blogs that I follow on there. And the other day I was looking at something, and it was just an incredibly beautiful piece that someone had finished. And actually, it was a Jacobean piece. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, I'd really like to do one of those. I should get one. And then I stopped and I said, you know, what is wrong with me? You know, I don't even want to know. I don't want to count how many projects I have kitted up, sitting there, started, whatever. And here I am looking at another one. But it's, you know, they're so fun to look at, and you go, oh, I want to do that, and I want to do that, and then you want to buy it. And I'm so envious of, you know, like all the women who have finished Sarah Brazier. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Number one, I'm in awe. But number two is, oh, to have the time to do that.
I know.
Oh, geez, to have that monstrous thing all finished and so beautiful. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It comes to, and we've talked about this sort of from a different angle before. There's pieces that you want because you want to stitch them because either they're a challenge or you want to learn something. And then there's pieces you want because you want to have them, because the end product is something that's beautiful. That's a beautiful piece of art at the end.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're looking at that Jacobean crewel work and saying, that's a beautiful thing that I would like to own. Right. So if it was somewhere, you would purchase it. But at the same time, you're like, I don't really want to stitch it. I just want to have it. Right? Does that make sense?
Well, it does. It does, except I want to stitch it.
Yeah, you do, right? But there's more of that element of, you know, I want to have that work. And especially if you follow the Royal School on Facebook or any of the social media sites, they post a lot of that particularly, because that's the first class. If you go through any of their diploma courses, the Jacobean crewel work is the first sort of module that you do. So there's a lot of posts with that sort of style in it. And it really is stunning. And they take it, they twist it a tiny bit. So it can be very, very traditional looking, but then there's a lot of people that take the class or that work in that style that give it a little bit of a modern twist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's neat to see that. And it's neat to sort of think about, I was having this conversation about a completely different thing, but it's one of those cases where you have to know the rules in order to know how to break the rules. So you need to know what Jacobean crewel work is, what defines it, before you can know what things you can sort of bend a little bit.
Okay.
So that it's still Jacobean crewel work. But it's got a little spin on it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Like black work, you can, I would argue sort of that, you know, you can change the color,
right?
But if the style of the embroidery is the same way, where it's very geometric and it's done, you know, on a white background cloth, that, you know, those rules you can bend, you have to, and maybe it's the number of things that you change. that you can do where it's still true to being that same thing, right? So it's kind of cool to see people doing a little bit different things.
Oh yeah, that's the fun part is what people do. Yeah, I changed these two colors and I did this different. Oh yeah, I see that. It's fun to see people who really will just go out and just try stuff and change it. Yeah. Yep. Well, there we go. I had to stop myself because what stopped me was, I was sitting at my stitching table looking at something. And I was, I want to buy that. And then there sits Gayanne Rogers' Tudor Rose kit that just came in. Just staring at me. It's like, what are you idiot? No. Just stop yourself. You know,
and
just
that's
stop.
That's another big one. And that's another one that's going to require
concentration.
So that one, I've made myself a promise.
Uh-oh, here we go. All right.
That I'm not going to start that one until I finished another one that sort of falls into that category. So that's where my lines have been drawn.
Okay.
So I have rules now. Okay. I don't know if I'm going to always stick to them, but my rules for now, just to keep the chaos a little bit under control mostly, is to kind of keep it to one or sometimes two, for a great exception, of each style of piece going at a time, right?
Okay.
So right now I still have the big Debbie Rowley piece, which is a big, needlepoint piece going. And so until that one is done, I'm not going to start another big needlepoint piece because then I'll end up with 7 million half done pieces because I am notorious. It just in general in things, I'm a really good starter of things and I get 98% of the way and then I don't finish them. And I don't know why. There's some psychological thing going on there. We could go into a whole psychoanalysis of why that is. But that's for a different kind of podcast.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I think it's a fear of loss, but we'll save that for another day. That's
fear
my rule.
Fear of
it's
loss.
Like, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I said, that's a different podcast.
Yes, that would be different. Uh-huh.
I have a theory, but so that's my rule. Until I finish a piece, I'm not going to start another piece that's the same style.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean I can't start a different style.
Okay. All right, I got it. Okay.
I have standards.
Yes. Rigid, no doubt.
No, not completely.
Okay. That's an interesting approach. Okay. All right. We'll see how that plays out. Uh-huh. I think I have a feeling how it's going to play out, but we'll see how it plays out. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to totally break from our plan that we have. I'm going to give you a tip. Because I don't often have
our plan is if we follow the plan. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Here comes the tip. All right.
So, right. So, you know how we depend very much on our fellow bloggers and content providers to provide tips all the time. And I don't usually have very good tips. I've had a few, but here's one that I really like. So, you know how you have all of these kits that you have that you don't have, or you have them either kitted up or not kitted up, but you're sort of in this, sort of nether world of either things are, to be done soon, next, to be done, this year or, in the next 2 years or to have and to look at, and to love, but, not in the near future at all.
Yes. Yes. I know all of those things. Yes.
Right. Right. So this is how I've...
Yes,
I've
I have all of those things. They're exactly. Okay.
Right. So I'll tell you how I have them organized. And this makes sense to me. And it kind of, it brings sort of order to the chaos and it makes it feel a little bit more, it makes it feel better to me. What I did was, generally the charts are kind of standard-ish size. They're about 8.5 by 11 magazine-ish size, right?
Yes.
And they fit mostly into plastic bags that are either gallon size a lot of them come, the kits come with plastic bags that are around that size, or you can get plastic bags that are around that size, right? So that's not difficult.
So well, actually, okay, hold on to that one. Okay, hold on to that one. until your tip's over, but I'm having trouble in that area. But go ahead, continue.
Okay. So when I find one that's that size, I keep it because I know that I don't always find ones that are that size. And I will reuse them. And of course, you know that my works in progress are all in my bed sheet, you know, remainder bags that I use all the time. So what I did was for the things that are not works in progress. So I have this one cabinet. So the works in progress are all in my bed sheet bags, and they're, you know, you can see right through them because they're clear exactly what they are. And usually they have a little place that there's an extra piece of plastic. You can slip an index card in it and you could write right on it what it is in case it's not obvious.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's nice. So you can just grab a project and go, and it's super easy that way. And they also are about the right size to fit your chart. So that's your works in progress. Now for the other ones that are separated into the never nevers but love to look at, or the would like to get to soon, so I have them kitted up and ready to go. I bought magazine holders, you know, the ones that sort of fit on your desk.
Yes.
That are sort of, they're tall in the back and they're shorter in the front.
Right.
That you would use to sort folders or like office supplies, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Use those. They fit perfectly. And you can fit probably 5 kitted kits, and then charts, you can fit, you know, quite a few. And then you have them sort of sorted out that way. And it keeps them all, you know, into their nice little families.
Of stitching type.
Yeah. And it's very orderly.
That's a nice tip. Yeah.
Because otherwise I find them on my bookshelves and then they get mixed up with other things. And that doesn't make me happy. I like having my kits together with my kits, and, you know, not a lot of my life is organized, as my husband will tell you. Like, he's the type of person that organizes his closet, and my closet's not organized at all. But my workspaces tend to be very organized. That's how I have to work. I have to have things, you know, a certain way. And this is one way that I've found really helps, because then, you know, you can also move things. And then when you're, you know, if you're having a bad day, let's say, or you're having a day where you need some inspiration, you just go to your Never Never magazine rack, you know, the one that you know is not kits that you're about to do. And you just go through that, and you just have a happy 15 minutes or an hour or something going through things that you forgot you had. And it's a really nice thing to do. And they're all organized there, and they're just right there handy, instead of, you know, jumbled in a stack or packed underneath fabric or someplace you forgot you had them.
Right. Well, that's where my stuff is at, is piled on. Yeah. Because I have this.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you say, this is fascinating, you know, psychoanalysis time, that you have to have your work area very neat. And then otherwise you don't worry about it so much. And I'm the complete opposite. I have to have everything else has got to be pretty tidy and clean and, you know, all that stuff. But my workspaces, my desk, and we work at home, my desk, I know drives Marga nuts because I have piles. I operate out of piles, and I know what's in each pile and where the stuff is at.
Yeah.
And my computer desktop, you know, the screen scares people. It just scares people. But I know where stuff's at, and I'm fine. And my stitching area gets to be that way, but because I need actual table space, I'm forced to clean it up and tidy it up with more frequency because I actually need table space. So I'm completely opposite from you in that way.
Yeah. And I think part of it is being brought up in a laboratory, right? I take that back, because I work with a group of chemists, and I have 8 chemists that work under me. And there's one other chemist that works like I do, and her lab bench is pristine, and it's immaculate and clean and orderly. And the rest of the place, like, I get the willies when I walk in there. Because it's, you know, they all know, and they'll say exactly the same thing. They know where everything is, and it's handy for them.
Right.
But to me, like, I would have to wipe everything down if I had to work there.
Yeah, now see, that, and I find that interesting too, because I would think in a chemistry situation, a scientific research development situation, that you would almost be compelled to keep everything neat, tidy, and orderly for fear of some accidental interaction or mistake. But apparently not.
Yeah, I think you would think that.
Well, I do think that, but apparently I'm dead wrong. So, okay.
Yeah. I mean, we keep the dangerous things, you know, separated, but the rest of the stuff, you know, there's bottles and bottles and bottles and bottles and bottles and bottles. I mean, when you think about it, if you have a lab that's got 8 people working in it and there's 800 ingredients, think about the potential.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay. But yeah, that's interesting that you have to have that workspace just so. And I don't worry about it. I know where stuff's at. I know what needs to be done. It's in my head. I keep going. And if something slips through the cracks, there's usually 4 people to remind me that I didn't do it. So I don't worry about it that much, you know?
Yeah. See, and so that's really funny though, right? Because your work, right? This is very interesting because your work, you're very focused on having it done perfectly.
Right.
And like this sort of work, the imperfection in the art part of it doesn't bother me at all because art is messy and life is messy. But then in my work, I have so many redundancies built in. Like I work like an engineer, right? So I have my job that, you know, the thing that I'm doing, the thing that I'm building, you know, whether it's it could be anything, whether it's a physical thing I'm building or an idea or, you know, a structure or a process. And then there's multiple redundancies built into everything that I do so that there's always, you know, if something goes wrong, it's never, ever a problem because there's always not only a plan B, but a plan C. So no matter what happens, it's like, okay, that's not a problem. We move on to the next thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's just, I have to work with, you know, whereas in stitching, it's like, nah.
Yeah.
It didn't work out. That's okay. What it is what it is, you know? So it's weird. We are completely opposite.
Yes. Because, well, and see, for me, I mean, what has to come out of my editing efforts has to be exactly right. And the package that goes to the artist for layout and design has to be all in order. Everything has to be mapped out, laid out, identified, uniform labeling, everything. So that there's no question when she starts to lay it out about what needs to be done.
Yes.
But what comes out of my efforts, you know, it starts with what appears to most people to be a mess. But that's just the way I start. And I have a jumble of stuff and then I sit down and I make order out of it. And that's how I function. But now, yeah, Marga, like my desk, well, when we moved to the house, when we started working at home and our son Kevin moved out, we took over we made our office in his bedroom into our office. So 2 desks. And we had downstairs this big L-shaped oak desk, big thing that I was using downstairs in the family room. And we moved that upstairs because that was going to be perfect. Well, that was Marga's. And then we went to IKEA and got me a little 3 by 5 foot desk.
Yes.
And a table behind me. But Marga was gentle about it, but my desk had to be in the half of the room that is furthest away from the door so that when you walk by the door, you cannot see my desk.
And the size, you are like a chemist I used to work with, which I used to call him Air, because his stuff would expand into the space it was given.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
So she gave you a small desk so that your mess could only be 3 feet by 5 feet.
And it's a problem. It's a real mm-hmm. problem. And and the little table behind me is piled up. And I know that I could just take a box and take my arm and just swipe all that stuff into that box and probably wouldn't miss any of it because it's just been piled there. But I have been known to bring up a TV tray table from downstairs to give myself a little more extra surface space at times. And I know, I make sure that doesn't stay very long because I know it, Margaret's just going, oh, no, stop him. But, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I know I drive her nuts, but I can't help it. It's the way it is. And then her desktop, you know, everything is absolutely in order. There's very little on her desktop. It's all put away. And even if she has a stack, it's all stacked very neatly. And, one day, what was it? Oh, I put something down on her desk the other day and it created a little breeze and it upset one of her 3-page stacks. First thing she did was grab those 3 pages and stack them back in order. And I thought, if that was me, I'd have just shoved them close to each other and good enough. So yeah, it's just interesting how everybody works. But yeah, you can't see my desk from the hallway. Mm-mm, no.
I can appreciate that.
Out of view.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I understand. You know.
It is. It's interesting how everyone has different ways of working, you know, but it goes back to, again, how we started talking about this, which is each of the different types of needlework serves a different purpose and, you know, rests our brain or challenges our brain in a different way. So sometimes we need that order, you know, cross stitch gives us order. It gives us a sense of creating order out of something that is not orderly. So perhaps, you know, that's when we need something like cross stitch, when we feel like, you know, something in our life is out of control or in disarray or uncertain or, you know, things are going awry. Cross stitch is a nice thing because it feels like you're creating order out of not order.
Yeah.
And then maybe something like surface embroidery or something like that is something different where if your life is maybe mundane or routine or has gotten into a rut of, you know, doing the same thing all the time, that gives you an outlet to, you know, create something that is not orderly, that's different and new. You know, same thing with a really difficult needlepoint piece. It challenges your brain to step out of the rut that you're in or the same routine, you know, and that's when you learn that Jessica or something like that. So maybe we're without thinking about it, we're sort of feeding our brain in ways that we're not aware of.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think the psychology of stitching is a fascinating area, as you described. I really do. And I think that's why people enjoy it so much is because mm-hmm. those kinds of things happen to them. And therefore, it's beneficial. You know,
yes.
Enjoyment of stitching aside, you know, just set that aside. There is a mental benefit. And I think, and I'll be sexist here, but when it comes to women and you look at most women's lives with kids and keeping a house going, and if they're working, it's that island of order and peace and quiet that allows them to retain sanity. I think it really, there is a lot more to it than just needle thread and ground cloth.
Yes. I would agree.
Yeah, I don't know why men enjoy it, but I've often thought that it really gives women just that, you know, that everything stops, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It just stops and silence and just lock it out and have just, even if it's a half an hour, it just recenters them and lets them then now tackle the rest of the thing.
Yes.
Yeah, because we were at this past weekend, we were in St. Louis at our daughter's house. And I mean, it's been a long time since Mark and I have had little kids around. And she has two children. We have two grandsons, 1 and 3. And Saturday morning, I went for a bike ride. So we stay in a hotel, and my bike stays at their house. So I come over early, before everyone's up, get on my bike, and I go ride. And I come back, and when I walked into the house, you know, as I said to Sarah, Sarah's zoo was in full cry.
Yes.
You know, two kids wanting breakfast, wanting this, wanting that, toys everywhere, you know, the full metal thing. And later on, I thought, yeah, a half hour of stitching will, after all of that would really be just the thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just stop the zoo for half an hour. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's just interesting. It's an interesting dynamic that, you know, back in the days of reproduction samplers where there was a function for the stitching and a need to sew and repair and mend and all those things. Today, I think it's found a different niche in the lives, and but still serves a very positive purpose. It's interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I would love to see somebody do, you know, more research into it besides us, you know, opining about the different types of things. I think it's worth doing, you know, how different types of, because it's not just stitching. I think that baking and cooking do similar things, for people, you know, different hobbies do different things, but needlepoint especially, or not needlepoint, but needlework in general, how people use it to, you know, I mean, I think there's a reason that there's arts and crafts in psychiatric hospitals.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you said hobbies, and hobbies have that role for everyone. I mean, I believe everyone should have a hobby. I really do, because it gives you that thing that makes the other side of your brain work while you're, you know, your left or your right, while your other one is working out real world problems. I think everyone should have a hobby, but I just think needlework goes an extra mile in that area. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to see truly scientific studies about the impact it has on people and just helping them stay sane.
So here's what I would like to see, right? So you know how they do PET scans, you know they're PET
mm-hmm.
scans, like, and functional PET scans where they're actually, or functional MRI, I'm sorry, it's not PET scans, where, so normally an MRI is a static image of what your brain looks like, or any part of your body looks like at one moment in time. And a functional MRI of the brain is an image of your brain as it changes as you are doing a thing or speaking or being told something, and it tells you about
the little
what
reds
your brain
and oranges and yeah, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it tells you, it helps scientists and physicians learn more about what areas of the brain are doing at different, you know, when challenged with different tasks, or, you know, if you're asking somebody to run or to think about music or to speak or to listen, what areas of the brain light up. And it helps, you know, it's helped quite a bit to learn what areas of the brain are responsible for doing those things, you know, or ask someone to remember, what's the first memory of their mother, you know, okay, so that's, you know, an area of the brain that's involved in memory. I would wonder, you know, I would love to see a comparison between those sorts of questions exactly as they're asked, and then those sorts of questions asked while somebody's doing needlework. That's the sort of mindless needlework that we talk about.
Yeah.
Because part of your brain is active, doing it, you know, keeping your hands busy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if you are able to think about those things differently because you are somewhat distracted. Does that make sense? So something, especially something emotionally charged, right? So a lot of times we, especially something very emotional, a lot of times if you think about something very, very emotional, especially something difficult, we sort of, if somebody asks you to think about it, like something tragic in your life, you think on it, you touch on it, and then you kind of break away, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
You think about it and you you touch it like a hot stove, and then you know it's there. It's a photograph, and you jump away. I would hazard a guess that if we're doing needlework, we're able to stay with it a little longer because our brains are a little bit distracted, maybe we're able to process those memories differently because our brains are doing different things.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't know. I have no idea.
It'd be interesting to see, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see one of those scans and see the colors change. Yep.
Yeah. Huh. I think so.
Well, we just need funding for the research. We can do it.
We need somebody that's doing some neuroscience to take that on as a task.
Yes. It would be fun. Okay. Now, two more basic things.
Okay.
Our friend Arlene Cohen has a new website, worksbyabc.com. And I point that out not because, you know, hey, she has a new website and she sells designs and so on and so forth. But she also has a blog with that. And she just started. I think she has four posts. But she's now put up a three-part series on her Antioch mosaic design and how that evolved and developed. And I just love hearing her talk about how the math works and how she sees a design and works it all out. So, you know, check that out. I just enjoy reading. Well, that's why I enjoy her FlossTube videos, because she takes you through what goes through her head as she develops these designs. And I think it's just fun to watch and learn from her. And she's very good at conveying the information so that it actually makes sense. Mm-hmm. But, this Antioch mosaic, which is a stone mosaic tile design of some size that is at, I believe it's Wellesley College where she went to school, that's on display there. And then she has taken that and made needlework designs out of it. And it's just interesting. So I just call your attention to worksbyabc.com. And if you have a news feed thing, add her blog to it, because Just interesting the way she describes things, and learn from her and see how she goes about things. I just think it's fun. So just, hey, something to look for. And that, you know, that was the other thing. Feedly is the news feed. I don't know what feed you use.
I use Feedly also.
That's the best way to get a news feed software app, like that. And then go around and collect needlework blogs and websites, people who are fairly active and post regularly. And then you just put the URL in there. And then in your Feedly each day, you check it, and you can categorize them by different groups. For instance, I have needlework. I have needlepoint, needlework, and cross stitch. But then I also have cycling. Mm-hmm. So I have a whole rack of websites that I follow that have to do with cycling. And I follow several people who do a lot of bicycle touring, because I find that interesting, following one who's going all the way around the world on her bike. And you just put all those in, and then for me, at breakfast, that's my reading, is I sit down and open up Feedly and just go through and read the various new items that people have posted overnight, and it makes... Quite frankly, in today's news environment, it makes for a much more upbeat start to the day. I will say that.
Agreed. It's even easier. So if you just download the Feedly app onto your phone or your tablet, whatever you use, all you have to do, if you don't know the website that you're looking for, like if you know Works by ABC, you can search on that. Or you can just go right into the search bar and type in a subject matter that you want. And a lot of them will just come up naturally. So you can just go either search for a specific one or just put in a subject, and a whole bunch of suggestions will come up. And oftentimes the other thing you can do is go to that. So put in a suggestion, come up with one. And then a lot of the bloggers on the sides of their website will list other blogs that they themselves enjoy. So then you can go to those and then put those in your Feedly. So then, okay, you decide that you like Jane's, you know, Chili Hollow. So you go to her site, and then there's a whole list of things there. So you find one that you like there. So you put that in into Feedly, into the search bar, and you find it and you add it. So it's very easy to come up with a list of things. And before you know it, there's, you know, 20 or 30 articles a day that you can skim through and find something that you can read in the mornings. Yes, that's not the news.
Yes. Well, and that's just it. If you're a mom who is forever dropping off and picking up kids and waiting for them, there's always something new to read. And you can just sit there in the car and just read those and have a little escape moment. And like I said, it doesn't have to be just needlework. You can have other things. And like you can put wetalkfiber.com in, and then you'll get, every time we post a podcast, you'll get a feed from that. But, yeah, I do the cycling thing a lot. I have several columnists and blog posts and stuff on cycling, and it's just a nice escape. And, you know, and you delete them, and you can skim by them. You can skim them. You don't have to read them all. And they just, you can save them. I have several that I've saved. I want to go back and read it again, or it's a good reference. So you can tag them and save them and share them with others. It's a powerful tool. If you're starting off your day reading the news, you'll have a better day, I guarantee you, the next time you try it with Feedly. I guarantee it. Hey, and speaking of Jane Wood at the Chili Hollow extravaganza there, that Needlepoint extravaganza, Jane Wood, a couple of things that I was just poking around to see what was going on, and I did not know this. She had something about threading needles that she was referencing another site, and you'll just have to go to Jane's thing. I'll put a link on the page for this podcast to where that's at on the Chili Hollow extravaganza. But one of the comments that this person she was quoting said that some of your readers, meaning Jane's readers, may not know that the eye of each needle has one beveled side to make threading easier. If the thread won't go into the eye on the first try, turn the needle to the other side. I did not know that.
I also did not know that.
I learned something, and I picked up some needles, and sure enough, beveled.
Huh.
So, yeah. I'm still going to use a needle threader, but I did not know. And so that's probably how people who are really good at just threading without needle threaders, they probably know that little secret. And,
yeah.
And the needle goes right in. So thanks, Jane.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. And then I was reading, and I have run into several people who are having aches and pains while stitching. And it's limiting how long they can stitch or limiting whether they can stitch at all. And ergonomics, I keep threatening to find someone to do a show with us on ergonomics. But if you go on the right side of the Chili Hollow website, Jane Wood's Chili Hollow website, which is chilihollownp.blogspot.com, and that should be in your news feed, by the way. If you go to the right side and scroll down a little bit, she has a section of links for ergonomics, health, and yoga that are all can help you with stitching. So because there's avoiding stitching injuries, ergonomics and exercises, hand and wrist exercises, a whole bunch of them, needlepoint pain relief. And so there's some links there to articles, exercises you can do, or ways you should sit or not sit. Ways your arms should be supported and so on and so forth that would really help you if you have pain. If you stitch for an hour or so and you start having pain and have to stop, check that out, because there's a whole bunch of resources there that no doubt something there would help you. So, what would your five Feedly must have feeds be?
For needlework,
what would those be?
Probably Jane's,
right.
Mary Corbett's,
right.
Needle and Thread,
Vonna.
Yes. Vonna Pfeiffer.
Okay. There's your top three. No doubt about it.
That's my top three.
Can we go to five? Can we get to five?
I don't know. I tend to bounce around after that. Nordic Needle used to be a good one. From there, I think the other things that I do are things that are like shop newsletters.
Yes.
And those I go through email, not so much through Feedly.
Right, because I would say The Attic, that newsletter.
That, and I like So-and-So, which is a British one.
Oh, don't know that one. So-and-So?
Yeah, So-and-So.
Say so, like S-E-W and S-E-W?
I think it's So and So, S-E-W and So, S-O.
Okay.
And I picked them up because they're starting to offer online classes with the Royal School. So it's not a, it's more like the Craftsy classes, but they're Royal School affiliated, I would say.
Okay.
So that was how I first found them. So they're really just a shop, but they have some classes and they have some interesting things on there. So that's when I look forward to seeing their, even if it's just like a promotional email.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one I'll always click on.
I'll have to add them.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to think about this. Can we get to five? But I mean, yeah, Vanna, Mary Corbett, and who was the third one?
Oh,
Jane Wood. Jane Wood. Yes. Those three. And the, oh, and I wanted to call people's attention. Instagram, really been enjoying Instagram lately. And we have, FiberTalk has an Instagram page that you're more than welcome to follow. But I, you know, and this is going to sound really weird, but when we first started the Instagram page, you set it up and you started following a lot of people, that are on there. And the one that, and this is going to be really weird, but I just find it amazingly fascinating, is Prior Attire. You had started following her, Isabella Pitcher, who makes her living. And what it was back in August, I think, she announced that she could not take any more orders for next year. So she makes her living doing these historically accurate Elizabethan and Gregorian and all very outfits, dresses. She does mainly dresses, but she also does men's clothing that she designs and makes from scratch. And she also has a YouTube video. I find it absolutely fascinating every time she posts stuff, the stuff she creates. And I mean, it's gorgeous stuff all the time. Those great big giant dresses with the, you know, with the big bustles and I don't know what all, big puffy sleeves and stuff. And it's just amazing how she creates that stuff. And she does it all the time. It's one of my favorites. I really, I don't know. It just, the craftsmanship that goes into it and the creativity is just fascinating to me. She's quite a lady.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really neat.
Yeah. So I would suggest that one for people. Prior Attire is what it's called. And yeah, really good. And she does, they do a lot of historical, like they'll go to a museum or a castle or something and have a weekend where they're doing, she and her husband, he's a very good photographer, are doing historical, you know, reenactments or whatever. And then apparently in England, well, over there, in Europe in general, they have a lot of balls where people do them historically accurate. And so they'll all get dressed up in these outfits, men and women, and do the dancing and all the things. And, it's just amazing to me. Yeah.
That's pretty neat. Yeah. I really enjoy that one as well.
Yeah. She's really good. So I highly recommend that. That's going to be it. Now, Sunday, we will have with us Linda Eaton from Winter Tour Museum. And Linda is there's a big title goes with this, the John L. and Marjorie P. McGraw Director of Collections and Senior Creator of Textiles at Winter Tour. She's the, as far as I can tell, she's the head curator for the operation. Now, so she's going, they have a new exhibit on embroidery and history that just opened a week ago. And in 2 weeks, they're having a workshop related to this. And the exhibit runs through January. So this show, we're going to talk about that exhibit curating it, what she did, how she puts it together, how she and her team, there's no way she does it by herself, put it together. And then we'll have photos of many of the pieces that are in the exhibit. That we're going to try and put together a slideshow on our website, and then we'll use the photos in our floss tube video. So we'll have that, and then wanted to just devote a show to that. And then she's going to come back in about a month, and we're going to talk more generally about her job and how she became a curator of this magnitude and her background and so on and so forth. So we'll learn more about her and what she does and how she does it in about a month. But wanted to start it out to do that. But then when I saw this exhibit, it was like, we got to talk about the exhibit. So so we'll have that on Sunday. Linda Eaton. And of course, if you're anywhere near Delaware and can get to Winterthur, so many people who live in the East there have told me that we have to get somebody from that organization to talk to us, because I guess it's quite spectacular all the way around, not just needlework, but all the other collections they have. So so that's Sunday. That's going to be fun. And part one of the Linda Eaton Life in the Times of Linda Eaton. Maybe we'll call it that. Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yep. All right. That's it.
Very well.
Yes. Thanks for listening.
Take care.